Forge Ministries is pleased to welcome Caleb Head with a message entitled, Immediatism and the Failure of the Pro-Life Movement.
All right. Well, good afternoon. Really looking forward to talking with you guys today. I'm really blessed and really excited that we've got this many people here. I've got a message that hits really close to home for me, and I'm really excited to share with you guys, and really glad that everyone, you know, we've got such a big group compared to what I like. I don't talk to groups very often, and usually they're really small. So this is really cool. So, like you said, my name is Caleb. I'm part of the Abolitionist Society of Houston. We're a group of Christians that we organized a couple years ago to have a presence in front of an abortion clinic every single Saturday that we could. And we've been up and down since then, and, you know, we've had our ups and downs, and we really strive to bring the gospel into conflict with the evil of abortion. And so we do that on all sorts of cultural fronts, like we go to high schools, we go to colleges, we go to the actual abortion clinics themselves. We go to all sorts of events. You know, we really want to take this to every arena that we possibly can to confront our culture on this evil that plagues our nation. So, about 4 years ago is when God really started to convict me of my own apathy towards abortion. And I've been fighting abortion in some way or another ever since then. And so I've been able to see, like, the good, the bad, and the ugly of all three sides of the abortion debate. So I've been able to, you know, there's good and there's bad in every camp. And it's just been, you know, over the last 4 years, I've been able to see it from a really, really inside perspective because I've been so involved in the movement. And it's been a lot of learning and a lot of growing for me as I've shifted from being in one camp and one belief system to really evaluating and finding out, like, my own beliefs are being challenged, you know, to see what lines up with the Word of God. So I want to talk about our topic today. We're going to be focusing on the pro-life movement in general, okay? So the pro-life movement and those that oppose abortion, and we're going to be talking a lot about two big words today, immediatism and incrementalism, okay? And our topic is called immediatism and the problem with the pro-life movement. So you see, like, 42 years in America, we've had legalized child sacrifice. We've legally been allowed to murder our children for 42 years here in the United States. And with that being the case, it's kind of formed this two-sided system of classification of what side we fall into, okay? And with this being the case, we don't really think too hard about this system that we have. Are you pro-life or are you pro-choice? What are you? You know, we just kind of fall into the pro-life category and do what the pro-life movement does, and we don't question it too much. That's the system that we're going to be looking at today, though. Okay? Because as Christians seeking to honor God, we should always be reevaluating and revisiting our own actions to make sure they're in line with what He wants for us and making sure that we're always doing things to please Him, right? So let's talk about immediatism. What it is and why it's our topic today. And actually, it may be easier if I introduce incrementalism first. So, you know, incrementalism and immediatism, they're two viewpoints that are highly political, okay? They're very political viewpoints on how we are to go about outlawing abortion in our country, in our state, in our county. You know, it's two political viewpoints that we can hold to, okay? So first of all, it's important to note that these viewpoints, they both claim to have the same desired outcome. They both say that they want the same thing in the end. At the end of the day, they want the abolition of abortion, completely. You know, no more abortion is allowed. That's what both sides say that they want, okay? And taken at face value, they could be looked at to say they're different strategies. They're, you know, this is how we're going to go about fighting abortion, how we're going to go about getting to the end, okay? So we have the end in mind. Now it's just the means. We're talking about the means. What are we going to do in order to abolish abortion, okay? So let's define the two. So incrementalism is the approach of taking small steps over time to restrict, limit, and scale back abortion one increment at a time. Okay? I'll say that one more time. So incrementalism is the approach of taking small steps over time to restrict and limit abortion one increment at a time. Examples of incrementalism played out in our culture today. Those are going to be things like fetal pain pills or ultrasound. You know, you have to have an ultrasound before having an abortion. Restricting what medical facilities abortions can be performed in. Undue burden clauses in whatever restrictions you put in. Banning abortions in a particular age range. These are all examples of different incremental legislation that the pro-life movement has put into effect in the past 42 years. Immediatism, on the other hand, immediatism is the rejection of incrementalism. Immediatism is the demand for complete, non-negotiable, uncompromised abolition of abortion without exception and without delay. Sadly, in America today, we do not have any example of immediatism played out in the realm of abortion. Not in any state, not in any county. Like, there's no example of it. And you see, we have no example of immediatism played out in this realm because for so many years, the pro-life movement has held fast to their incremental approach. For 42 years, that's been how we're getting rid of abortion, is one step at a time, one step at a time. We're going to restrict this. We're going to ban that. We're going to get rid of this. Little things at a time, okay? Over the decades, the pro-life movement has shifted and changed and gone through all sorts of different phases. And as a movement, we have seen a forsaking of truth as it links arms with our culture and goes further down the road of degradation and sinfulness. And we just see the pro-life movement changing and going to a more worldly place. And it's unfortunate. Pro-life movement has become a hub for apathy, for complacency, for self-serving and empire building and compromise, and overall, with the pro-life movement, the whole head is sick. But Caleb, the pro-life movement, it's pro-life. It's against abortion. I mean, it's pro-life after all, right? Let's take a look at that, okay? Let me stop real quick and ask everyone a question. So I want everyone in here to just take a minute and think, like, can we all be open-minded right now? Can we all open our minds to considering that we may need to reevaluate some of our own thoughts, some of our own beliefs surrounding this topic? Can we commit to letting go of presuppositions that may force ideas into our mind that inform what we already think about that? Can we do that? I'm hoping so. Let's take a look at incrementalism and why it is corrupt. Okay? Why is this such a problem with the pro-life movement? So, first of all, when I say the pro-life movement, I want to be very clear what I'm saying here, Okay? When I say the pro-life movement, am I talking about specific people? Am I talking about everyone that says they're pro-life? Am I talking about organizations? What I mean when I'm saying that is the pro-life movement as a whole. The entire thing overall, okay? The overarching group of everyone out there that identifies as pro-life and the common ground that the majority share. Okay, so that's what I'm talking about. The mega organizations like National Right to Life or Students for Life, 40 Days for Life, countless other organizations. We have like the pro-life leaders that, you know, kind of put a statement out there of this is what the pro-life movement is, like Scott Klusendorf and Abby Johnson. You know, the masses that make up the pro-life community. And a great majority of the people that make up this pro-life movement, first of all, are Catholic. A very large majority of them are. And second of all, a very large majority of them are modern Christians, modern Christianity, which is no Christianity at all. It's feel-good Christianity. So please be sure to note that, you know, there are individuals who many of us identify as pro-life that do not act like the majority of pro-lifers, okay, that I'm talking about today. And, you know, not everyone that says I'm pro-life fits into this mold and fits into this stereotype that the pro-life movement and its leaders and its organizations put forward as this is what pro-life is and this is what it stands for. Okay, so not every individual, I'm not saying that, you know, if we say we're pro-life, then I'm talking about you today. What I'm talking about is the pro-life movement as a whole, okay, and what the problems that lie therein are. So let's jump into it. Let's talk about the problems. I've got 5 problems of the pro-life movement today, okay? Problem 1. The pro-life movement has sacrificed its core beliefs to become an industry. Okay, that's our first problem with the pro-life movement. With so many mega organizations like I was talking about and everything that's become so big, people make pro-life their careers. They make it their devotions and their lives. And at the end of, you know, for example, at the end of every pro-life meeting or rally or whatever you have, there's always the donation tray. Always a tray that's passed around to drum up funds to fight abortions or to save the babies. And, you know, it's a fundraising machine. Okay? The pro-life movement has, in a very large sense of the word, become a money-making machine that corrupt men have overhauled to obtain recognition, to obtain job security, and to obtain followers, a following. Okay? Problem 2. The pro-life movement, long ago, stopped treating abortion as murder and started treating it as health care. Healthcare helps people. Doctors, medicine, nurses, healthcare, it's devoted to life, health, healing, helping people. Abortion doesn't do any of that. Doctors themselves take an oath to first do no harm, right? And yet the pro-life movement still recognizes and holds abortionists as doctors. To first do no harm? That doesn't make sense. No, friends, healthcare heals people. Abortion destroys. That is the second failure of the pro-life movement, as we stopped treating it like murder and started accepting the rhetoric that the pro-choice movement and our opposition has put forward, which is, it's healthcare. We need to treat it like such. Problem 3. The pro-life movement does not act like abortion is murder at all. So did you know that outside of our circles, it's kind of crazy to call abortion murder. I hope everyone here knows that. It's pretty insane to most people. If you call abortion murder, people are going to look at you funny if you're not around our people. It's okay to be personally pro-life. You know, I'm pro-life personally. But as soon as it gets real and applicable just like that, the game changes completely. Women who murder their children are viewed by the pro-life movement as victims. Victims, when they are the ones that are committing this crime. Victims of their circumstance, or victims of the culture, or victims of something. They're looked at as a group of people that needs to be pitied. And certainly, we need to have compassion as Christians. We need to be loving. And at the same time, would the pro-life movement take the same approach to abortion if they were looking at it in terms of toddlers being murdered? Would they still have the same approach of, we're just going to hug them and smile and love them out of it? I would hope not. But guys, my point here today is what I'm saying is the pro-life movement is sick. There's a serious issue with the pro-life movement. There's a lot of them. And honestly, I think that they would. That they would treat it the same. That we're gonna treat it like healthcare, and we're not gonna act like it's murder. Problem four. And I hope I don't step on toes with this one. The pro-life movement wants to keep abortion safe, legal, and rare. Safe, legal, and rare. This is because the pro-life movement has failed to stand firm. Does that mean that every single individual that identifies as pro-life wants to keep abortion legal? Of course not. No. When you look at the pro-life empire and the pro-life industry that they have built, the way that they treat abortion, the way that they hate children, the way that they use human lives as political pawns and chess pieces, it becomes abundantly clear that the pro-life movement no longer views this as something that's important because human lives are at stake. I mean, after all, what would happen to the countless salaries and the countless employees of all the pro-life organizations if abortion was abolished? What's going to happen to them? I mean, I know if I were making $100,000 a year from a pro-life organization, if abortion is abolished, I got to go find another job, you know? Pro-life movement strives to sustain itself, not to end abortion. But Caleb, pro-lifers wouldn't actually oppose the end of abortion, would they? They wouldn't. They're pro-life. Pro-life people don't oppose the end of abortion. Like I said, sure, not all of them do. I'm talking about the majorities, the big organizations, the pro-life movement as a whole, right? Let me tell you, I've been centrally involved in multiple political efforts to completely and entirely, without restriction, without compromise, without any of that stuff, end abortion. Multiple political endeavors. And who is the first opponent to step up and say, don't do it? It's always, every time, been someone that's pro-life. Every time. It is never the pro-choice people. They normally don't even hear about it. Not until the pro-lifers have already put a stop to it. So I'll get into that a little bit more and a little bit later. But all this to say, you see that the whole head is sick and the whole heart is faint. There's a serious issue. So, problem five. The pro-life movement will not relinquish their incrementalism in the political arena. The pro-life movement will not relinquish their incrementalism in the political arena. You see, there is a treadmill that we have been on as a nation for 42 years. And the pro-life movement wants to keep us on that treadmill. Running, running, we keep going, and we're not going anywhere. We're staying in the exact same place. Why is this a problem? What is the problem with the pro-life incrementalist approach, and why should we disagree with taking steps to stop abortion, with restrictions, with bans that doesn't abolish all abortion, but it abolishes some? So let's get into that. In fact, we're going to get into some details. We're going to look at a very, very applicable part of, or extension of incrementalism. We're going to look at Texas House Bill 2. Okay, this is our state's incremental bill that we passed back in 2013. Okay, so in 2013, the pro-life movement, we formulated this great bill that we put through the legislature, and we actually got it passed. It was put forth by the Texas Right to Life, and it was a long battle. I mean, there were orange and blue teams at the Capitol going back and forth, and it got really ugly. The pro-lifers won. Okay, so what did the bill do? There were 4 points to this bill. The first was that in order to perform an abortion, the abortionist had to have admitting privileges to a hospital. He had to be within 30 miles of that hospital where he was performing the abortions. Okay. The facility in which he was performing abortions had to reach ambulatory surgical center requirements and a 20-week gestational age ban. So any abortions past 20 weeks could no longer happen. So what is the problem with this? Why is this bad? I mean, after all, 75,000 children are murdered in Texas every year. And 600 of those are past the 20-week mark. That's 600 lives saved. I stood out at an abortion clinic like every Saturday for 4 years. I haven't even seen 100. With one bill, 600 lives saved. This is really good, right? Wrong. And let's talk about why. Do we want to save 600 lives? Yes, of course we do. You know, it's good to save lives, but before saying that an action in and of itself is good, let's get a little bit more in depth and let's read the bill itself. This is, quote, directly from House Bill 2. A physician performing or inducing an abortion must, on the date the abortion is performed, have active admitting privileges at a hospital that is located not further than 30 miles from the location at which the abortion is performed. A physician performing an abortion shall terminate the pregnancy in a manner that, in the physician's reasonable medical judgment, provides the best opportunity for the unborn child to survive. In another section, near the end, once it lists all the prohibitions, it says, the prohibitions and requirements and restrictions written in this bill do not apply to an abortion performed on an unborn child who has a severe fetal abnormality. These are all direct quotes from the text of House Bill 2, and they're standard wordings for every incremental bill in the nation. I mean, this happens all the time. It does. But what would happen if we change the wording of that middle one? to be more accurate. It would say, a physician performing an abortion shall murder the child in a manner that, in the murderer's reasonable judgment, provides the best opportunity for the unborn child to survive. Does that make any sense? That makes no sense at all. What is this doing? Does this honor God? This is the problem with incrementalism. Does House Bill 2 stop abortions? Yes. It stops abortions. Does it save some children's lives? Yes. Does it accomplish the end goal of saving lives to any extent whatsoever? Yes, it does. But here's the question that so many people forget. Does it honor God as we do it? So let's use an illustration. So I'm a real estate agent. That means that I work a 100% commission job. And my income depends solely on how many houses I close in a month. Okay? I'm also getting married this year. And that is going to put a large responsibility on me to provide for my family. Right? So let's say I get married and my business starts going downhill. And it goes downhill real fast. The market takes a real bad turn for the worse and things just go terrible. It's not working. I run out of money. I can't pay my bills. And we get kicked out of our house. And now I'm in a really bad position. What am I supposed to do? I've got to provide for my family. Well, ideally, I'll go get a job and I'll start providing for my family. But time is running out, y'all. There's no food left. What am I going to do? I ain't got no money. No money, no food. What am I going to do? So one night, I go out and I break into a convenience store. And I'm in and out real quick. Just long enough to get food. And then I come home afterwards. I don't get caught. Thankfully, I don't get caught. The government doesn't do anything about it. I get home and I bring in food to my family. I've provided. I've done my duty, right? I've fed my family. Wrong. Do you see the similarities here? Is it a good thing to feed my family? Of course. But it becomes sinful to feed my family when I sin against God in doing it. Right? You see, God is equally as concerned with our actions while we're trying to reach this good goal as He is with us reaching that good goal. Everything matters to God. The ends and the means. You see, if we compromise our ethics and sin to try and accomplish something that is good, it no longer is good. The ends never justify the means, ever. We cannot sin in order to do something good for God, right? I mean, sin is naturally displeasing to God. It's contrary to His nature. It's an offense to Him. It's displeasing to Him. So, isn't it backwards that we would think, I'm going to please God by displeasing God? It just doesn't work. James tells us that whoever knows the right thing to do and fails to do it, for him, it is sin. Friends, never once does God give us permission to tell people how they can sin. God doesn't give us that permission. We don't get to tell people you can sin this way, even if we're trying to reach a good goal. You know, nobody's debating what our goal is right now. We all have the same goal. It's the means that we're talking about to get to that goal. And if your means are sinful, you're in sin. You know? Incrementalism in the legislation that's put forth by the pro-life movement to try and save some by telling the world and the culture the specific ways in which they can murder their children, it does not bring glory to God. I mean, how does it tell, how does it make any sense whatsoever to tell someone, you have to melt your child and not decapitate them? This honors God. This makes Him happy. This makes Him joyful and proud of us. Why does the pro-life movement think that it's right to tell people that you have to have a certain kind of building and then you can kill babies for a living? Incrementalism not only is a failing and non-effective strategy to reach abolition, it's an offense to God. So I want to look at an excellent case for immediatism in the Bible. Okay? So, when Moses was going to Pharaoh, demanding 10 times that he let his people go, watch what happens in Exodus 10. This is a bit long, but try and pay attention. Stay tuned in and see when Moses is faced with the opportunity to be incremental in his actions. So Moses and Aaron went in to Pharaoh and said to him, "Thus says the Lord, the God of the Hebrews, how long will you refuse to humble yourself before me? Let my people go, that they may serve me. For if you refuse to let my people go, behold, tomorrow I will bring locusts into your country, and they shall cover the face of the land so that no one can see the land. And they shall eat what is left to you after the hail." This was the plague right after the hail had hit. "And they shall eat every tree of yours that grows in the field, and they shall fill your houses and the houses of all your servants and all the Egyptians, as neither your fathers nor your grandfathers have seen from the day they came to this earth." Then he turned and went out from Pharaoh. So Pharaoh's servants said to him, "How long shall this man be a snare to us? Let the men go, that they may serve the Lord their God. Do you not understand that Egypt is ruined?" So Moses and Aaron were brought back to Pharaoh. And he said to them, "Go serve the Lord your God." But which ones are to go? Moses said, "We will go with our young and our old. We will go with our sons and daughters, and with our flocks and herd, for we must hold a feast to the Lord." But Pharaoh said to them, "The Lord be with you if I ever let you and your little ones go. Look, you have some evil purpose in mind. No. Go, the men among you, and serve the Lord, for that is what you're asking." And Moses and Aaron were driven out from Pharaoh's presence. Then the Lord said to Moses, "Stretch out your hand over the land of Egypt for the locusts, so that they may come upon the land of Egypt and eat every plant in the land, all that the hail has left." So Moses stretched out his hand over the land of Egypt, and the Lord brought an east wind upon the land all that day and all that night. When it was morning, the east wind had brought the locusts. The locusts came up all over the land of Egypt and settled on the whole country of Egypt. Such a dense swarm of locusts as had never been seen before, nor ever will be again. They covered the face of the whole land so that the land was darkened, and they ate all the plants in the land and all the fruits of the trees that the hail had left. Not a green thing remained, neither tree nor plant of the field, through all the land of Egypt. What did you catch there? Pharaoh made a proposal to Moses. "I'll send the men. Let me keep the women and children. I'll send the men so y'all can go do your thing. Go worship your God." Don't you see the similarities here with what the pro-life movement does? We'll take these and leave those. But what was God's response? Locust! Right? This step in the right direction, Moses walked away from. He could have taken the men and taken that step in the right direction as he's getting to the end. But he didn't. He turned around and left because he knew that compromising and making a deal with evil is wrong. And in the end, God got justice. And he took a long time to do it. So what are we supposed to do? Incrementalism is clearly an attack on the image of God. But what can we do? I mean, our culture won't accept full abolition. But friends, we don't listen to the culture. We listen to God. God requires holiness, and we're to obey His laws and commands. Not answer an opportunity with half obedience, right? What honors God is full obedience to His command. Without compromise, without exception, the complete and total abolition of abortion. We are not going to tell our culture how to murder their children. We're just not going to do it. We're not going to make rules about who can do it and when you can do it and where you have to be when you're going to do it. Now, we're going to tell our culture to repent, to turn to Christ. We're going to give them the gospel. We're going to give them the true answer that's actually going to be the solution that's going to help them. And we're going to demand the total and immediate abolition of abortion. No restrictions, no guidelines. We're going to tell them to do what God wants, not what we want. So, earlier this year, abolitionists in Texas, we launched a political plan to implement immediatism in our own state government, okay? You know, we launched a strategy to do that. And we started a grassroots movement. We made propaganda, and we went up to Dallas for the Republican State Convention of Texas. Okay, and we went up there because we had a proposal to abolish abortion in Texas completely that we wanted to get the entire party to support. It has a lot more oomph to it when you can say the Republican Party wants you to do this instead of, you know, Caleb does. So we went up there, and you would think with all these pro-life people and all these Republicans in one place, this is going to be easy. We're going to get rid of abortion. It's a bunch of people that hate abortion, right? It was an all-out war. It was a battle with the Republicans and the pro-lifers. We weren't around a bunch of pro-choicers, you know? We were opposed left and right by a lot of people who, they thought women are victims, and we can't abolish abortion right now. We have to go slowly because, you know, that's just too much of an undue burden on them. That's just too much. We can't do that right now. And we were opposed by district delegates. Like the people that represent the districts of Texas, I mean, they were literally having secret meetings in the middle of the night trying to figure out how to get our proposal in the trash. Republicans. And then we caught them, and we got back on. And who was the number one opposition to our cause? It was one of the biggest pro-life organizations in the country. One of the biggest pro-life organizations in the country said, no, we should not abolish abortion in Texas. Instead, we need to pass another incremental bill. I just had a hard time believing it. Like, it kind of blew my mind at first. It's like, really? We're getting opposition from pro-lifers. But it just confirms everything that I was talking about earlier about how the whole pro-life movement is just, is just sick. It has cancer. Thankfully, we were successful on our mission. God blessed us and chose to thwart our enemies, those who opposed us. And so for that reason, you know, we're moving forward with our strategy. So, you know, in the 2017 legislative session, we'll be doing a lot of activism. And so we actually need a lot of help with that. So if you are interested in volunteering and helping out with that, come talk to me or come by our booth sometime. We would love to get in touch with you and see what we can do. So I want to share a video now. And the video is from a movie called Great Debaters. And it's about you know, in early America when there was a lot of racism still in our country. A team of African American debaters took on the Harvard team of debaters. And the debate was whether or not black people should be allowed in white colleges. Okay? This is a really great video. I'm really excited to share it. It's an immediatist versus an incrementalist. They both want blacks and whites to be able to go to the same college. And one person says today, and one person says not today. So let's watch this real quick.
Resolved. Negroes should be admitted.
I can't hear you.
Resolved. Negroes should be admitted to state universities. My partner and I will prove that blocking a Negro's admission to a state university is not only wrong, it is absurd. The Negro people are not just a color in the American fabric. They are the thread that holds it all together. Consider the legal and historical record. May 13, 1865, Sergeant Crocker, a Negro, is the last soldier to die in the Civil War. 1918, the first U.S. soldiers decorated for bravery in France are Negroes, Henry Johnson and Needham Roberts. 1920, the New York Times announces that the N in Negro would hereafter be capitalized.
To force upon the South what they are not ready for would result in nothing but more racial hatred. Dr. W.E.B. Du Bois, he's perhaps the most eminent Negro scholar in America. He comments, "It's a silly waste of money, time, and temper to try and compel a powerful majority to do what they are determined not to do."
My opponent so conveniently chose to ignore the fact that W.E.B. Du Bois is the first Negro to receive a Ph.D. from a white college
called Harvard. Dr. Du Bois, he adds, "It is impossible, impossible for a Negro to receive a proper education at a white college.
The most eminent Negro scholar in America is the product of an Ivy League education. You see, Du Bois knows all too well the white man's resistance to change. But that's no reason to keep a black man out of any college. If someone didn't force upon the South something it wasn't ready for, I'd still be in chains and this book here be running for my old massa.
I do admit it. It is true. Far too many whites are afflicted with the disease of racial hatred. And because of racism, it would be impossible for a Negro to be happy at a Southern white college today. And if someone is unhappy, it is impossible to see how they could receive a proper education. Yes, a time will come when Negroes and whites will walk on the same campus and we will share the same classrooms. But sadly, that day is not today.
As long as schools are segregated, Negroes will receive an education that is both separate and unequal. By Oklahoma's own reckoning, the state is currently spending 5 times more for the education of a white child than it is spending to educate a colored child. That means better textbooks for that child than for that child. Oh, I say that's a shame, but my opponent says today is not the day for whites and coloreds to go to the same college, to share the same campus, to walk in the same classroom. Well, would you kindly tell me when is that day gonna come? Is it gonna come tomorrow? Is it gonna come next week? In 100 years? Never? No, the time for justice, the time for freedom, and the time for equality is always right now.
So you can see the similarities here, right? So America, I mean, we had some very deep-rooted racism in our country for a long time that expressed itself in the legislature and in our laws that, you know, politically was rooted out. And America removed that from our legal system. Right? And here we are today, and we've just redone what we undid a long time ago, just with a different people group. Not with black people anymore, but instead with the unborn child. So what are we supposed to do? We've talked about the problems with the pro-life movement and all the negative outcomes from there, and we've talked about the failure and the sinfulness of incrementalism. What is immediatism? What does it look like? So immediatism isn't all that complicated when you think about it. It's simply the demand for what's right. Right? It's working to implement God's moral statutes in our government today, specifically applied to murder in the womb. So what are some of the objections that we get, or the arguments that, against immediatism that we hear often? So, well, the first one that we hear the most often is, well, yes, I'm working towards abolition of abortion, but we should take everything that we can get on the way. I mean, if we can save 600 children by implementing House Bill 2, shouldn't we do that while we're still working towards the abolition of abortion? So that is a fair argument. It's still wrong, but it's fair. And here's why. So the incrementalism approach, or the incremental, let's see. There's two types of incrementalists here. There's two types of that mindset. There's the incrementalist, like we just watched in the video, that says, no, we can't have abolition of abortion. We have to stay back here and take steps to get there. We don't want that today. And there's the incrementalist approach that says, we want the abolition of abortion and we're going to take steps to get there while we're fighting for it. You know, they would take immediate abolition if they could. You know, there's kind of two camps within this camp, right? It's my belief that the majority of people that we know that would hold fast to incrementalism are the type that, you know, they would take abolition if they were capable of doing that, if the opportunity arose. You know, most people in our circles would believe that, I would hope, you know, if they are incrementalists. However, when you go out into the world and you see the mega pro-life organizations and the masses of pro-lifers, they're not like that. They would oppose the abolition of abortion. And it's for that reason that, in my mind and in many people's minds, the biggest obstacle to abolishing abortion is not the pro-choice movement, but the pro-life movement. Those that oppose abolition in general, though, they're not the ones that are usually making this argument that we're talking about why not take what we can get while we're working towards abolition. They generally don't make this argument. So we're talking about people that we're going to be in contact with, or maybe some of you in the audience, if you hold to this position, you know? The argument is that while working towards abolition, we're going to take the compromises that are made by our culture. You know, we should accept those because it saves some lives while we're trying to save all of them. And this is understandable if you're looking at it from a pragmatic viewpoint. Okay? We're going to do whatever works. You know, regardless of what it is, we're going to do what works. As long as it works, let's do it. Okay? But I'm going to challenge anyone who thinks that way to think first and foremost, does this honor God? That's the question that the pro-life movement never asks. You know, we have this almost, it's almost like our two-party system of pro-life and pro-choice. And, you know, we're Christians, we're raised this way, we're raised pro-life, so we don't even think about it. We're just pro-life and we do what pro-lifers do, so we're incrementalists by nature. It's just how we fight abortion. We don't even think about it. I challenge you to think about it. I challenge you to ask you if every bill that you support, every paycheck that you write to support an organization, every time you cast a vote on a ballot, every action that you do that involves abortion or fighting abortion, I would challenge you to ask yourself, does this action that I'm taking honor God to get to where we're going? Does the means honor Him? And sometimes we're tempted to think, well, He doesn't say not to do it, you know. Sometimes we do things that we're kind of on the fence about because we're like, oh yeah, it'll get us to where we're going. And, you know, I mean, He doesn't say not to do it. And, you know, it just, you know, we're not super convinced that it's the right thing, but we're not convinced that it's the wrong thing. Guys, this is, when we're talking about what's sin, an abomination against God, we don't want to be guessing. We don't want to be on the fence wondering which way are we going to go, you know? If you're not sure, you either need to be sure or you need to not do it. Are we going to do things because we're not really sure if it's going to honor God or not? We want to be certain that our actions that we're taking are glorifying Him. Does it bring God joy, what we're doing? That's a lot harder question to ask, you know? Sometimes our minds can figure out a way to say, yeah, this honors God because it gets us to where we're going. But does your action right now bring Him joy? Or does it grieve Him? Oh, Caleb, we can't abolish abortion overnight. It's got to be a long process. We're big tree takes a long time to cut down. That's one we hear a lot as immediatists. Okay? Here's the thing about immediatism. Immediatism doesn't say, I think that abortion will be abolished tomorrow if we just all do the right thing. That's not, you know, maybe, that'd be nice. But we're not saying that that's what we're expecting. What we're calling for is immediate abolition. It doesn't mean that we're unrealistic and think we're going to get it tomorrow. We recognize that this is a big thing in our nation. This is a big thing in our state. Texans kill 75,000 of our own children every year. That's a big number that's not going to go away overnight. So for that reason, sometimes the word immediatism can get a little bit confusing because it's like we're expecting that it's just going to end like that. We don't have our head in the clouds. We get it. You know? Immediatism says we're going to work towards the abolition of abortion in ways that honor God. That's what we do as Christians. So, in closing, I just want to ask a simple question. Are you an incrementalist? Are you an immediatist? Because I'll be honest with you, there's incrementalists within our own churches, our own brothers and sisters. They hold strong to immediatism. They hold it in good faith. They believe that it's the right thing to do. We've got two very strong sides to our argument that are very set on doing things their way. So what are you? Has this helped clarify things? I hope so. God calls us to love Him first and our neighbor second. What I'd like to put in front of you today is that incrementalism is loving our neighbor first and God second. We've got to be more concerned with pleasing God because God's going to get what He wants. God wins. God doesn't lose. He's going to get what He wants. We just have to want to obey Him. You know? We want to please Him in what we do. And, I mean, when we're talking about, you know, love God and love your neighbor, we can all do a better job at doing that, at doing both of those. You know? And we can all find more ways to love our neighbor as ourselves. After all, loving your unborn neighbor is not a suggestion or a recommendation or something that, you know, you just can do. It's a requirement for all of us as Christians. So what does that look like? I hope that at least today that's provided some clarity on what that looks like moving forward in the political realm, of course. You know, like I said before, these are two very highly political ideas. So, you know, what that looks like in the legislature and you know, in the bills that are put forward, you know, I would encourage next time an incrementalist bill comes up, do we really want to support that just because it has the big label of pro-life? Is that what we want to support? Just because something has pro-life on it or a Jesus fish on it, to know that doesn't mean that it's right. Let's be diligent and evaluate everything by God's standards. And let's see, is this something that's going to please God and honor Him as we work towards abolishing abortion?
If you would like more information about Forge Ministries, including information about our upcoming events, please visit us on the web at forgeministries.org.